Thank you so much for joining us today. Once again, right here on the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And there is a very exciting event happening today. Starting today that you can register for it. The actual event starts June 24th. So you can go to naturalnurse.com and just send me an email and say you want the free link to the Remedy series. The Remedy is just amazing. It is the top information docu-series about herbal medicine that I have ever seen. I am one of the herbalists in it. They actually scanned the world and around the United States, and they took a film crew to all these areas where people can learn about herbal medicine. There's no products discussed. It's the plants themselves, where to find them, how to collect them, and what diseases and illnesses they can be used for. Now, that is really hard information to get these days, because if a company is selling herbal products, then they cannot use it. So they cannot use it if they are selling products. They can't tell you what they are used for. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that is the FDA rules. So therefore, it's really, really important if you would like to learn about how to use herbal medicine to actually go ahead and watch this docuseries. What it is free. It's free for a little while. And then, you know, they start charging you. So it's good to go ahead and sign up now, because you'll be able to catch the entire thing. You will learn a lot about what herbs to use for what illnesses. And that is called Remedy, Ancient Medicine for Chronic Illness. So thank you so much. And today we are happy to have as our guest Dr. Amy Shah. And our topic for today is going to be allergies and the hygiene hypothesis. Dr. Amy Shah received her medical training from three of the top schools in the country, Cornell University, that's my alma mater, as well as Harvard and Columbia. And she is also a wellness and nutrition expert who focuses her specialized skill set in a combination of both Eastern and Western medicines to focus on hormones, allergy, and gut health to help the body heal from the inside out. Dr. Shah is called upon frequently by the media for her expertise, which we're going to do today, and points out the fact that allergies are actually getting worse in developed nations. Dr. Shah discusses four natural ways to power through the worst high pollen allergy days. And for more information, you can find Dr. Shah at amymdwellness.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Shah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, when you talk about pollen allergies, don't people who have pollen allergies also often have cross sensitivities with other triggers such as foods?
Absolutely. It's something that a lot of people don't know about, but there is a phenomenon that's quite common called oral food pollen cross reactivity syndrome, which means that if you're allergic to certain pollens, your body mistakes certain fresh fruits and vegetables as pollen, and it starts creating a reaction in the mouth, like tongue or lips or throat itching.
Yes, and so we often see that, I guess, and perhaps as a physician, you can explain to us, you know, what an allergic reaction is, because, you know, we do know it has to do with the release of particular molecules such as histamine. People are probably familiar with antihistamines, but if we can get a handle on what releases histamines for us, and we practice avoidance when possible, that can really help.
Absolutely. Yes, your body has very various arms of the immune system. There's an innate immune system. There's an adaptive immune system. A very primitive part of our immune system is this hypersensitivity type 1 reaction, which is what an allergic reaction is. What that means is there are preformed cells in your body that are ready to fire if it senses that you have ingested or inhaled or touched an allergen. So, for example, if your body does not like ragweed pollen and you are out in ragweed season, a lot of those preformed cells with histamine, leukotrienes, all kinds of other prostaglandins, they will release and immediately release. And so what you might get is symptoms within 15 to 30 minutes of, and usually even less than that, usually it starts at like the 2 to 5 minute mark. And the most scary example of this is people who have severe peanut allergy, for example, where your body is looking for a peanut protein allergen, and as soon as that gets ingested, it releases all of the contents of these cells all over the body. So that's basically what an allergic reaction is, whether it's food or pollen or a chemical.
So that makes a lot of sense. And unfortunately, I would imagine many of our listeners can relate, because there certainly are people who don't suffer from allergies all the time, but they have more of what you would discuss as seasonal allergies.
Yes, exactly. There are people who have these symptoms only when things are blooming.
So that would be certainly, this is a big time of year. And depending on where you live, for instance, I live in Florida. And in Florida, definitely the season is way early. Like we're talking end of January, beginning of February. That's when a lot of the seasonal plants start blooming. But here where I am now in the Northeast, it's really heavy pollen season right now.
Yeah, all over the country, actually. In Florida, it goes all the way till June.
So you're saying once these seasonal allergies time of year start, it's not like it's just a few days.
Exactly. It can be months. Places that have a hard freeze, the Northeast, the Midwest, they actually have a very much more defined end and beginning of allergy season. It's like the hard freeze ends it, and the first blooms start it. But if you live in a place that's not, doesn't have such a hard freeze, it can be a little harder to figure it out.
Well, that's true. And when you say figure it out, now, this is something that people experience. So I have noticed with my patient population, and I've been doing natural medicine since 1964, so I have a pretty big database, that a lot of people have a clearly defined, they know, they go, uh-oh, it's that season again, and they kind of can figure out, okay, I'm going to suffer for 6 weeks. But it seems that over time, that pattern changes, where they sometimes get allergic to new things, like people who were never allergic to cats, let's say, go into someone's house and suddenly get those same kind of seasonal symptoms, which they don't recognize at that time of year. Or the opposite can happen, that they become less sensitive as well.
Yes. It's kind of a myth that you cannot develop new allergies as an adult. You definitely can, especially with new exposures, change in environment, and change in your personal microbiome.
Uh-oh, you used that magic word. That magic new word, microbiome. I'm actually giving an entire conference presentation on microbiomes, and I've been in a summit of microbiomes. It's interesting to me because that seems like a newer word, but the entire concept in, let's say, natural medicine, we just used to call that something else, such as like intestinal bacteria, some which are positive and some which are negative. But with the microbiome concept, I think that has expanded tremendously because it really looks like we're just sort of a vessel and lots of things live here. Our own internal beingness, and of course there's a spiritual discussion about what that might be. And then on a physical level, the body where whoever we are is walking around in has a huge milieu of microorganisms that live there. It's their home. It's not like a war between us and them, because there are some that are actually proactively very helpful for us, while others create issues.
That's absolutely correct. I think that we're finally, in Western medicine, starting to understand that bacteria are not equivocally bad, and that actually probably the opposite. They're almost, a large majority of them are good.
Extremely helpful.
And that we're probably, we probably overdid it in the last 50 years with the antibiotics and antibacterials.
So what do you mean by that?
So that's, you know, we were going to discuss the hygiene hypothesis, and that's where it really gets interesting. What they found the turn of the century in London, when all these, the Industrial Revolution was starting, and all these children were moving out from the farms of England and moving into London into these high rises, and their parents were getting jobs in these factories and making much better money than they were as farmers and living nicer lives. However, this scientist, Dr. Strachan, noticed, hey, you know, these kids coming from the city are really having a lot more of these allergy and asthma issues than they ever used to see with these, you know, country farm children. And so what he did was did a huge study on thousands of children over like a 20-year period, where he looked at to see if his hypothesis is correct. And what he found was, yes, there's a big difference between these two types of children. These children that were in the farms, that were exposed to animals, that were eating, you know, playing in dirt, that, you know, were not getting as much allergies and asthma as the children who were moving into the cities and presumably, you know, richer, cleaner environment. And what he coined at that time was called the hygiene hypothesis. Now, the hygiene hypothesis has since then...
Wait a minute. What year did you say that came out?
It was in the 1900s. I can't remember exactly when
In the 1900s, he came out with this verbiage, hygiene hypothesis?
Yes.
I never heard the term until really recently.
I've heard the concept, but not
the term. So I'm very fascinated by that.
And he started this whole movement of medical studies on this topic. And what they found is, yep, that's true. The more siblings you have, the less allergies and asthma you have. The more exposure to animals you have, the less allergies and asthma. The more dirt, you know, presumably the dirtier environment you live in, the less allergies and asthma. So what they concluded is they weren't sure, you know, we can't really pinpoint to this one thing that's different about these families and children. But what we can say is the theory is that from the ages of 0 to 5, your immune system, as you know, is very, very, it's like a sponge. It wants to learn everything. And so you actually need bacteria and viruses and even parasites. It has to be learning all the time. And if it's not learning to make antibodies to all these different bacteria, what it ends up doing is making antibodies to things it shouldn't. And so that is the theory of why allergies and asthma are increasing at skyrocket rates at this point in time, because we're just not giving the gut enough bacterial stimulation, whether that's from dirt, whether that's from vegetables, whether that's from animals, whether that's from sharing food, other family members. Or maybe it's the toxins that we're eating in our diet. It is not clear exactly what it is, but there is something bad going on with our microbiome that's increasing these things.
Well, it's probably a variety of all these things, Dr. Shah, that you are discussing. Like everything, it's not like one thing or another, right?
Yes.
It's
yes.
like a compendium, and something pushes an individual over the top. Because, you know, let's say everybody works in a place and some people have a cold or flu. Not everybody catches it, even though they've all been exposed to a particular event, such as a microorganism in that case, or certain allergens. Same thing why some people get seasonal allergies and some don't. There's a modifying presence, whether it be a combination of genetics, your resilience to various kinds of stressors, and like you're explaining, the amount of immune system pushback that you get. And what happens in those people who are sensitive is they seem to have an overactive immune system pushback. So what starts out as a really healthy protective effect becomes something that, you know, thank God it's not usually life-threatening, but it can be in the case of asthma, but more like, you know, very annoying for most people.
Yes, absolutely.
So how can one determine, you know, what they could do, let's say, if they know they're seasonally allergen sensitive? And I also find that changes. Some people who were never allergic before are suddenly having sneezing fits this season.
Absolutely. The allergy season environmentally is just getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, we're trying to figure out what it is that is making our allergies worse. And we think, you know, part of it is pollution and, you know, global warming. Part of it is our diet. But you would definitely see more and more cases of allergies every single season.
Now, is that actually verified medically, Dr. Shah?
Yeah.
Are people taking note of that?
So in some ways, they have noticed a five times increase in food allergies in the last 20 years, and they think it's more like at least that much for seasonal allergies as well. So there was, I think, the last survey ended in 2015. So yeah, there's nothing brand new, but we have noticed. Through research studies, definitely, that the allergy burden is increasing every year. Actually, I think there was a huge presentation at the World Allergy Congress that was talking about how weather pattern changes, along with, you know, personal dietary and lifestyle changes, every year we are noticing more and more allergy sensitization in the population.
So that's verified, that the amount of allergies are actually increasing.
Yes.
Now, do they say what they usually say in your profession, doctor, is that these things are only because, this is what I hear all the time, only because we're better at record keeping now. They don't usually like to admit that some of these health issues are actually exacerbating. They even say that about autism, shockingly enough.
Yes, that's the big thing with autism and asthma, actually, yes. But I think that what we cannot deny is that there are more and more cases of sensitization. So even in the last 100 years for allergies, where they've been able to kind of measure it, we've noticed it increased.
So there actually is, besides you just noticing, we'll say the medical profession notices that allergies are on the rise.
Yes.
Okay. So that makes sense. Now, the hygiene hypothesis, that term, is kind of being used again. So, you know, does that mean we should let our children go outside and eat dirt? To tell you the truth, I did. My kids are in their 40s. I mean, I didn't feed them dirt, but I lived on a farm. And, you know, they'd be outside. When they came in, they were dirty, and they didn't get yelled at for having dirt on them. I'm sure some of it wound up in their mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually posted on Instagram. So I post, I only do like one social media thing, which is Instagram. And I posted that we went to a farm this weekend, and I literally let my kids kind of dig up the vegetables and get down on their hands and knees. And yeah, you know, I didn't tell them to eat the dirt, but let's be honest, we rinsed off some of the vegetables, but we definitely ate dirt at some level. And I think that that's something that I wanted to say has been lost. And there are a lot of people who think that's disgusting. And I think when I was learning about all this in the beginning, my children were very, very young. And I remember going to Central Park in New York City, and I would get these dirty looks from people if I, you know, it's like everybody's hand sanitizing and using like these Clorox wipes on the stuff. And I just feel like, you know, it's almost taboo to let your children get in the dirt and, you know, sharing food with a healthy adult should be something that is promoted, where here I still meet people who never share food with their toddler or baby. And I said, you know, there's studies that show that sharing food with your baby is actually beneficial for the baby.
Wait a minute. Let's say that again. So you're saying sharing adult plate food with your baby instead of having them only use, you know, a brand name bottle, a can of food.
Yes.
And also, at what age are you talking about?
You know, the tides have turned. Now we're saying that as early as 4 months, when the babies get their first, you know, bites of actual solid food. You know, before that, they don't have the ability to kind of process lots of food. But at about 4 months of age, which would be the first, you know, 5 months, 4 or 5 months is when you start rice cereal. It is now talked about in allergy literature that, hey, you know, we should be letting them taste all different kinds of foods in Israel, where they feed babies a bamba snack, which is a peanut-based snack as their first food. They have very little peanut allergies.
Wow, that is interesting. Yeah. What is with peanuts, Dr. Shah? You know, let me say, a lot of people eat peanut butter sandwiches, and then to have people not just get a little rash, but an anaphylactic reaction where they could die, to the point of, I fly all the time because I lecture so often around the country, and very often on the flights, they say no peanuts are given out today because somebody has a peanut allergy. Well, why can't they just not eat it? It's so sensitive that if they smell it, I mean, it's outrageous what has gone on with peanuts.
It is insane. And can you believe that they found that places like Israel that use peanut as a first teething food, you know, at 4 or 5 months of age, they have the world's lowest rates of peanut allergy. Whereas U.S. and England, which have, you know, humongous rates of food allergies, and like I said, it's increased five times in the last 10 years. I mean, this is like enormous increases. They found that, hey, these are countries where we usually don't allow kids to eat any kind of real adult food until they're one or two, even with nuts. And so we're changing the way we think of things. And back to the, you know, things that I was saying, but there's studies that showed, hey, if you share food with your baby, there is beneficial, like this whole microbiome thing. You're basically sharing some new, different, maybe beneficial bacteria with your child, as long as you're not suffering from the flu or a bad illness. You know, people say to me, well, are you telling people to share food with their child if they're sick? And I'm like, no. I'm saying, you know, obviously, if you're sick, don't share food with your child. But if you're not sick, then it can be really beneficial to them.
Well, and it is the old-fashioned way, which we'll continue to discuss, Dr. Shah. And I want to remind our listeners, we are listening to our knowledgeable guest, Dr. Amy Shah, medical doctor. And when we come back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, we'll be continuing our conversation. We're going to take a little break here. Stand by. We'll be right back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us here on Progressive Radio Network. We bring you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z for many years now, and also they're all archived. So our guest today, Dr. Amy Shah, I'll be having her show archived as well. If you know someone who wants to know about allergies and more and wants to contact her in the future, you can also find her at amymdwellness.com. And if you go right now to naturalnurse.com, right on the front page, you will see a promo for Remedy, Ancient Medicine for Modern Illness, and you can just go down to the tag, click on it, and you can register 100% for free. They don't require a lot of information, and then they'll be sending you links to listen in for free, and I believe it begins on June 4th, but you want to register as early as possible to get all the gifts and giveaways that are associated with the series. And all you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com, click on that. Unless you get my newsletter, if you get my newsletter, then I already sent you a link, so you can look in there as well. If you don't get my newsletter, it is also absolutely free. And all you have to do is come and click on the link at the bottom of naturalnurse.com, left-hand corner. Put in nothing but your email, and then you'll be getting the newsletter. So we really do want you to know about Remedy, because I think it is the best video, and because the problem is we're so limited in what we can share about natural remedies and the science behind how effective they are for many disease states. That's because of FDA regulations of making drug claims for herbs. But those are only in effect when you are selling a product. So since in the Remedy docuseries, there are no products being sold, it's strictly educational, just like we do here on our radio show, strictly educational. We are not pushing, you notice, any particular brand of product. And we might talk about natural remedies, which we will, in terms of seasonal allergies, but we don't push, you know, buy this or buy that brand. So therefore, we're allowed to share with you information and education. And that's what we always do right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So I would like to remind you, we're listening to Dr. Amy Shah today, and Dr. Shah received her medical training at three top universities, Cornell, Harvard, and Columbia, and she is also a wellness and nutrition expert. So, Dr. Amy, let's talk about what made you become a doctor in the first place.
You know, I think there's two things. Was the aspect of becoming a doctor, aspect of becoming a different type of doctor. I always knew that I was always obsessed with nutrition. Actually, I know that you mentioned that you went to Cornell, and as you know, Cornell has one of the top nutrition schools, if not the top nutrition school in the country. And I knew that that's why I wanted to go there, because I really am obsessed with how food affects the body. And then from there, I think the natural thing for me was, you know, why am I so interested in it? Because it's so fascinating how you can change your health using food. So medicine for me was a natural next step going to medical school. It was also a big challenge for me to feel like I have mastered the body and how food and health affect each other. So my major was human biology, health and society at Cornell, and it was a mixture of nutrition and biology. And that was how it all started. And then, of course, I went to medical school and I graduated, and then I did residency. And then when I was in practice, I was like, wait a second, Western medicine has no construct for this at all. I mean, there's really no role in the Western medical world for nutrition and lifestyle. It's almost
But isn't
like
that amazing?
Yes.
With the evidence base that we have for that being the most important, both prevention and intervention.
Yeah, and it was nothing. It was like barely one section of 1 year where we learned about nutrition, and then it was kind of like this almost soft science where they didn't want to really talk about it because it was something that wasn't scientific enough or something like that. That's the feeling I got from it. And so I started practicing, and I was like, wait a second, all this time, all I wanted to do was tell people and teach people the relationship between food and the body. And now I'm in practice, and I loved my patients, but I felt like I was really missing a huge chunk of what I wanted to teach. And that's why this whole Amy MD Wellness thing started, because I said, well, now that we have the internet, we don't really have to wait to write a whole book on this. So I started to give patients some resources and started to post on social media and started to write for some sites. And that's basically how I got to where I am today.
Yeah, and a lot of doctors like yourself, because when is it going to change? I mean, you're young, and so you actually went to medical school thinking you were going to be appropriately trained in natural medicine. Well, did you know that the entire thing, I mean, from my mind, there's political influences in terms of, you know, really supporting sales for the drug companies seems to be what the entire medical education is focused on. And I think that is actually a travesty.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's changing. You know, there's a lots of medical schools who are starting to incorporate a lot more nutrition and natural lifestyle things. But you're right. It is. It seems so strange that it was barely taught. And that's why doctors today that didn't have a personal background, you know, personal interest, are not that well-versed in all of this food and lifestyle-based medicine because they were never taught that.
That is true. But it's really, you know, especially now, because I started this in 1964, and there was science there, but not like now, to where evidence where they're actually comparing like a natural intervention and a drug intervention, and they're seeing an equal or better outcome with the natural intervention, along with a much better adverse effect profile. So the evidence is there. And we don't want to throw out pharmaceuticals and surgery. They are tremendously life-saving. As a doctor, I'm sure you would agree. They're just inappropriately used for something like allergies. You're going to go and do, you know, nasal cavity surgery when just stopping eating wheat and dairy would have done it.
Yeah, and the other crazy thing about the industry is that, you know, not only are we putting out all these crazy medications, we're also contaminating natural. I didn't know this until I started working with this company, Genexa, that's taking out all these additives. But did you know that nasal saline, over-the-counter nasal saline that you get from the store, which is something I recommend highly for people who have allergies, you know, to clean out their sinuses, it has parabens. It has preservatives. It has... I mean, you look at the list of things that are added to the nasal saline, and I was shocked. Like, yeah, we need to be watching for that, too. You know, looking for things like, you know, something called saline care, which does not have these additives. Things that we thought, not only are we pushing medications, but we're even taking the natural stuff and making it unhealthy. It's insane.
It is insane. And I am so happy that you are a physician because you are in a position to create change because you have the training from the best schools in the country. And how did you learn then about all these natural interventions?
So honestly, a lot of it was self-taught because as you can imagine, you know, because we didn't have a lot of formal training there, I did do some a good number of research studies in my own lab. I was always interested in hormones and how they interacted with the gut. And, you know, now with all the microbiome stuff, I love that it's kind of in the forefront, that hormones, the immune system, and the gut are all linked. And that was never, ever understood, at least in the Western construct before.
That is so true. Now, when you talk about Western construct, I see that you actually say that you combine Eastern and Western medicine. What do you mean by that?
When I was in medical school, I had the opportunity to spend some time in India learning some of the Eastern medicine techniques, both Ayurveda and acupuncture. And I think what I realized was that one didn't need to be exclusive of the other. There were some amazing overlaps, and that's where I kind of like to stand because when I was going to medical school in the beginning, I just poo-pooed all this other alternative medicines because I said, oh, well, that's not, you know, as good because that's what we're taught. You know, none of that really matters. All that matters is what we're taught in the classroom. And when I did that time in India, understanding the energy centers, the meridians, and then in Ayurveda, the, you know, the doshas and really understanding that these are different constructs of health, and they can also be correct. They're actually, you know, people could argue longer standing and probably more correct in many ways. And so what I decided was that a lot of the areas where everything kind of meets is the areas that I like to stay in. So, for example, gut health is an area that Chinese medicine, Indian medicine, and Western medicine now are starting to agree on. And same thing with, you know, eating certain foods for your body. I think that was something that was introduced to me by Eastern medicine. So kind of combining the two and really seeing where it all meets is something that I love.
Oh, yeah, me too, because that I call good medicine. I call that prudent medicine. I call it, you know, looking at the evidence and using what works instead of going right to pharmaceutical drugs, which, of course, in the right situation is the right choice. But very often it's what you might call overkill, where something like acupuncture, which has a very low incidence of adverse effects, or looking at Ayurveda, where they're looking at the weather and the person and the food and all of how that interacts with each other. And they so often in traditional ethnic cultures use things like fermented foods on a daily basis, which helps to support the natural microbiome. So why not have that as standard of practice? And I am pointing to you, Dr. Shah, to make that happen. That should be standard of practice, not only for those wealthy individuals who can pay for what we now call, there's some term for it, you know, like special doctor, where you don't really get health insurance reimbursement. And so therefore, that limits that kind of knowledge base, which is the evidence-based standard of practice, I think it should be, only to those people who can afford that extra to pay out of pocket.
Absolutely. I think that we need to make big changes. I think in the next 20 years, we're going to have more solutions for people. So I agree with you. I think that this should, it's just a no-brainer. You know, we should be incorporating this for everyone, and it shouldn't be this super expensive premium item in health.
Well, when we are even now seeing in Congress them opening a discussion about the overcharging for conventional prescription medications in this country, to where we spend, what, 100% or 300% or 400% more than for the same exact pharmaceutical around other places in the world, you know, that is just actually disgusting on many levels. But the fact that it's becoming in the forefront of conventional conversations and congressional conversations, wouldn't that be the time to interject the fact that these natural techniques that you have learned and that you use and that you see are effective are also very cost effective?
Yeah, and I think the problem is, as you know, I've been in research. I did research for a number of years, and I think that the biggest problem is that research is expensive, and who finances these studies? People who have a stake in it, right? If you want to show that your medication is an amazing tool for Alzheimer's, you're going to fund that study, that $1 million study. But if you notice that a fruit, or saffron, for example, which is an Indian spice, is really amazing and just as good for ADHD as Ritalin, you probably don't have $1 million or more to spend on a huge study. That's the big problem.
Wow. That is so true. Well, we're going to take another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with our physician today. And her name is As we mentioned before, Dr. Amy Shah, extremely knowledgeable and in the forefront of discussing the hygiene hypothesis, allergies, and many other topics right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'll be right back with more.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information. The kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
On The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We're happy to have you with us. We're happy to have you visit with us. You can do that by going to naturalnurse.com, calendar, and see all the classes that we're giving. Many of them are online and offer CE credits for professionals such as nurses, acupuncturists, massage therapists, nutritionists such as RDs and clinical nutritionists, as well as NPs, nurse practitioners, and midwives. But anyone can take the class. And then if you are a professional, we give you the CE credits for it. And if you're just interested in general for yourself, or for instance, MDs, we don't have credits for MDs, but many MDs do study with us because they're interested in the cutting edge information about natural remedies. And as we can see, so is our guest today, Dr. Amy Shah. Now, Dr. Shah, what's the best way for people to find you?
I think the best way for people to find me is on social media, at Dr. Amy Shah on Instagram, my most active area where I'm there kind of on and off throughout the day. And then, of course, my website, anyone could send me a message through there. It's at, I think you mentioned it, but it's amymdwellness.com. And, of course, I do have an office if you are someone who's based in Arizona.
Or visiting Arizona. I love
visiting
Arizona.
Yeah.
What town are you in Arizona?
It's called Paradise Valley. It's a very small little place, like in between Phoenix and Scottsdale.
I know exactly where Paradise Valley is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's actually probably the most trees that you'll see in all of the Phoenix area.
Right, unless you head up towards Flagstaff. I mean, my children were born in Bisbee, Arizona. And I had a completely off-the-grid farm in Bisbee where they were raised.
Wow.
And Bisbee is also up in the mountains, even though it's south. Have you ever been there to visit?
I have never been there, but I have heard that it's beautiful.
Yeah, we'll take the ride one day. So what about the natural things that you recommend if people are suffering with seasonal allergies or any kind of allergies?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned one to you that is one of the biggest things I recommend, which is nasal saline, whether it's in a saline spray bottle like the Saline Care. Like I said, last for all those additives. I know a few brands that don't do the additives, which are at the forefront of this, like that company I mentioned, Genexa, has a saline care, which is all natural. All it is saline. And it doesn't
What about like the Indian version of a neti pot?
Yes, neti pot with saline is absolutely an essential and absolutely wonderful tool in treating allergies. I think that there are a bunch of foods, actually, that, for example, pineapple. Do you like pineapple?
I do, and boy, it has lots of bromelain.
Yeah, exactly. Bromelain is a natural antihistamine, and, you know, you can really, bromelain has been thought to be one of the most promising natural herbs in allergies. There's also, you know, turmeric. I think you know, and I know, you know, me studying a little bit of Eastern medicine, it has so many benefits, you know, well beyond allergies. But there is also a natural antihistaminic property in curcumin, the active compound of turmeric. There, and as you know, with turmeric, you want to have it with black pepper and oil to activate it. And then, you know,
see, that's really interesting, Dr. Amy, because when we talk about black pepper and oil, now the science shows that turmeric is absorbed much better when those things are present. And, you know, in the cultures where this was cooked, like a lot of my friends from India, that's how they cook. They threw the black peppercorns in oil. I'm talking about grandmothers, not like they're suddenly, you know, doctors and they learn how to do this. And then those peppercorns pop and then they add in the turmeric. So that puts together what we now know is a perfect combination.
Isn't that fascinating? Like, that's what I meant when I said Eastern and Western medicine. Like, the studies came out, wow, look at this. Curcumin is, you know, 2,000% more active when these things are added. And then we look at that and like, oh, wow, this is how thousands of years ago people prepared it. So I can only imagine, you know, the wisdom that comes from all of these different old forms of medicine. That what are we not, you know, what are we leaving out, you know, in our that we don't know yet, is what I think. So turmeric is a great one. Now, there is, you know, the big one I think that people have often heard about is honey. The problem with honey, I think, is twofold. I like natural, local honey as a remedy for allergies, but I also know that there's been many studies that show that most of the honey that we are able to get today in our stores, especially if you don't live on your farm or don't know the farmer, the pollen is completely dead. And the other problem is that most people who have seasonal allergies are allergic to grass pollen and ragweed pollen, not the pollen that comes in beehives, which is like the beautiful flowers and the fragrance. Those aren't usually the biggest source of allergies. The big allergies are from grass and weeds and these wind-blown pollen. So you can see there's a couple of problems. I still think that if you know your local farmer and you're able to get local honey, that can be a great remedy. But there are some issues with it, just having honey from the store. And then the other, you know, remedies, I have to say, as someone who mixes Eastern and Western medicine together, I cannot tell you
how many people do all of the right things. They are eating a super clean diet. They are sleeping well. They are controlling their stress. They're lowering their inflammation in so many other ways. They're eating all the right foods, but then they still have allergies. And for that situation, I tell them, you know, you're doing everything right, but for the allergy season, you can take a nasal spray or an antihistamine for your symptoms.
That's excellent, Doctor. That's so excellent, Dr. Amy. We are going to have to end, but exactly what you're saying is right. First, we use the least invasive thing, and if that doesn't work, we have the drugs. And if that doesn't work, you might have to do surgery for your sinuses. Yeah. But that would be so rare if we start with the natural things.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. You were a wonderful guest. I'm so excited that you are a doctor and that you are going to be more and more in a position of power. And I charge you, Dr. Amy Shah, with making this kind of knowledge, which is actually mainstream evidence-based knowledge, standard of practice in the medical industry, because that would be the truth. So thank you all so much for joining us today for another edition of On the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Go to naturalnurse.com. You can join in on the Remedy webinar. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.